You're listening to the Wordslinger Podcast, episode 95, A Girl Like Michelle Cox. This episode of the Wordslinger Podcast is brought to you by the audiobook edition of Coelho Medallion. You can find Coelho Medallion on Audible and use your Audible credit, or get Coelho Medallion for free when you go to audibletrial.com/creativewritingcareer.
It's the Word Slinger Podcast, where story matters. Build your brand, write your book, redefine who you are. It's all about the story here. What's yours? Now, here's the guy who invented pants optional, Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger.
Word Slinger.
Hey, this is Kevin Tomlinson, the Wordslinger. Thank you so much for tuning in for another week of Wordslinger hijinks. I appreciate that. Speaking of Wordslinger hijinks, I am actually at this moment broadcasting from my in-laws' theater room here in Sugar Land, Texas. And that's because over the weekend and through the most of the week, actually, Kara and I actually managed to pack and downsize from our apartment. We've crammed everything into storage. We've still got a load in her car that needs to go into storage, and we are aiming for the RV. I mean, we put a bunch of stuff in the RV that we now need to sort and organize and go through, and we're going to cull down some of that. I don't know if Kara's aware of that, but we are going to have to trim down some stuff that went in. I already got rid of a lot of my stuff. It's actually, it's interesting. And it's got me on a jag for just going through and eliminating a lot more. It's kind of once you start, you don't want to stop, actually. And we just have so much crap. We just have so much stuff. I spent a lot of time in a sort of angst. Reality crashing in around me, because I'm looking at all these things that we have. And we had a little adventure, on Saturday. We hired movers to help us move the bulk of our stuff into a storage unit. And it turned out the unit we had was too small. So as a sort of last minute change, at the suggestion of the movers, actually, the head guy, we upgraded our storage and had them start moving stuff over from both the truck and the old storage unit into the new one, which wasn't, it was on a different floor, but it wasn't that far. But we had a little revolt. two out of the three guys just decided they didn't want to do that, and even though they were being paid. So, and I understand, because that was a last-minute change, but I had to be very diplomatic and talk them into it, and gave them a nice bonus at the end. So it was a rough day, but we got it done. We then spent the next several days. Most of the past week has been spent going in. Our lease was up on October 12th, which happens to be my birthday. So we were scrambling to get everything done, get everything out. We cleaned the place up. And we did it. Now we have a load of stuff in Kara's car that still needs to go to the storage unit, and that's driving her crazy. And we're kind of bunking in with our in-laws, and we've got stuff in their sort of front room, which drives them crazy. So everyone's being driven crazy right now. but we're out, and it's an important step. We're going to be moving forward into the RV here in the next few weeks. We're going to take a couple trips before we take the sort of inaugural trip, the one where we're actually full-time living in the RV. We're going to do that over the Thanksgiving holiday. But we've got a couple of trips between now and then. So we're pretty much in. I mean, we've got to organize. That's pretty much what we got to do. Other than that, we would be living in it, I think. So that's all happening. And scaring the crap out of us, but it's exciting and it's fun. So, and if you listened to the interview with Joe and Kate Russo from We Are the Russos a couple of weeks ago, you know that there's a lot more to consider than just simply living in the thing. And you know, we're working through some of those details too. So that was a great interview. If you haven't listened to it, you should go back. Now on to this week's interview. And I'm talking to somebody that is very interesting. I had a great conversation with her. I'm talking to Michelle Cox, and she's the author of A Girl Like You. And she had a kind of a... I liked where she got her source material. it appeals to me. We have, I guess, a tendency to sort of overlook the generations of people who are, you know, in assisted living facilities and that sort of thing. And, you know, she worked in one of these and got some great stories and turned these into fiction. And I think in a way, to me, that feels like you're sort of honoring those people and honoring their past. I know there's this notion of appropriating culture, appropriating other people's stories or whatever. But you know, that's I don't want to say go out and steal someone else's life story. Maybe you get their permission, but I mean, authors have been inspired by the stories of others throughout time, and I think you know, otherwise, what would happen to these? What would happen to these little details? And I'm kind of excited about the whole idea. There are people that I wish I had talked to more in depth who are now gone from my life. And I think I could have honored them with some stories, you know, fictionalizing or otherwise, but I could have honored their memory a lot better had I gone and collected these tales from them. So it's a very interesting interview. I'm not going to keep you from it any longer. We're going to roll right in, but thank you for tuning in this week. If you have been corresponding with me at all, thank you. I am so sorry that I'm kind of behind on everything, but we're getting it together. We're kind of pulling it all together. So thanks so much, and I'll see you after this interview with Michelle Cox. Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in. Now I am having a conversation with Michelle Cox. She's the author of A Girl Like You. We're going to talk a little bit about her book and about her life, her career choice here. So I'm really excited to have her on the show. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, okay, first, let's jump into the nitty-gritty here. We've got your book, A Girl Like You, so give me a breakdown. What is the book about?
Well, it is historical fiction. Okay. It's the first in a series. It's set in 1930s Chicago. So that's probably the briefest breakdown that there is. It's about a young woman, I should say, whose father kills himself in the because of the depression, and then she is left to care for her depressed mother and younger siblings. So she kind of sets off to make her way in the world, and she ends up involved in a murder, and it's all about, you know, unraveling the case, and of course, the inspector who comes along to help investigate.
So she ends up involved in a murder, as we all do.
right.
So it's a historical fiction series.
Correct.
And this is the first book. So how many have you published so far? Is this the first one published?
That's the first one published. The next book two comes out in April. Okay. I've already written book three. I would like to start the fourth this fall if I can find some time.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I'm always fascinated by people who do historical fiction because I know how much research and work goes into that. I mean, one of the reasons why I originally wrote science fiction was because I could just make up history. Like, I didn't have to worry about you know, how accurate anything was. Somewhere along the way, physics changed, and, you know, we could do anything we want. But so what's the sort of process for, you know, mining material for what you're writing?
Well, that's a good question. To be honest, I used to, in the early 90s, I used to work in a nursing home on the northwest side of Chicago.
Okay.
And I heard so many fascinating stories. That's actually the source of one of my blogs, are, you know, all those stories from the nursing home.
Yeah.
So when I was writing this book, I kind of needed an idea. So I actually took one of the stories from one of the ladies that I had met there. She was 81 when I met her in the early 90s, and she was just this amazing, fascinating woman. She used to follow me around and tell me little bits about her story, and then I started following her around because she was so interesting. One of the things she used to like to tell me was that she had a man-stopping body and a personality to go with it.
Nice.
I just thought, wow, who says that, you know? So, Yeah, a lot of the story's details, Henrietta is the main character, and so she's kind of based on this woman. And a lot of the things in the story actually are true that come from her. Obviously, I had to invent the murder and the inspector and all of that. But the framework, some of the framework is actually from her. And, you know, of course, I, you know, did Google research on, you know, streets and streetcars and stuff like that. Some of the places are real, like the Aragon Ballroom, and then other places I just made up.
It's it is interesting how Google has opened doors for authors to you know, to get that research kind of on the shorthand.
Yeah, I feel silly saying it all the time. People always ask, you know, what's your research process, and I'm embarrassed to say, well, Google. But there's so much there.
You're not alone. I mean, I've recently, this past year, I started writing thrillers. And just this morning, I was on a forensics website looking up, you know, how to determine whether someone was strangled to death and what their time of death was and that sort of thing. And you know, I'm like, my life is different. My life is different than other people's lives. but yeah, so Google, of course, yeah, that's a phenomenal tool for quick research. But so you don't see, anytime I talk to someone who does historical fiction, I envision them in this, you know, this dusty library with this ancient tome in front of them, you know. But you're exactly in your bedroom slippers or something, you know, kicking back with some with some tea.
That's right. That's pretty much it. Yeah, you know, you can research anything. I mean, you can find old newspapers and stuff like that. I mean, I actually would love the idea of having to, like, you know, travel down to the Newbury downtown Chicago and, you know, look up all these manuscripts, but really a lot of it's just right there.
Yeah.
I do think, though, that I have the kind of mind that I'm very attuned to details, and those little things stick with me. So, you know, all of these stories over the years, a lot of those have stayed with me. And so, you know, when I need a particular detail, it's just easy for me to call it up.
Right. Yeah. And that's a handy skill to have for an author.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm not going to bother asking the kind of basic questions of where you get your ideas. You already kind of answered that anyway. But do you find yourself sort of synthesizing ideas fairly often? Or is it, you know, you pick one line of thought and you just branch out from it? Do you, like, combine stories you've heard from, like, your source?
Oh, definitely. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Because I have so many of them. I worked there for, you know, several years. Yeah. And I actually wrote a different novel before this one, and it was set in the 40s, and it was kind of more of a coming of age. And it was kind of my learning novel. Yeah. I couldn't get it published. It was really way too long. I didn't realize at the time that there's, you know, a 120,000 word limit. So mine was, you know, 224,000 words. Yeah. So no one would even touch it. But I actually did a lot more research for that one. And so I do find myself stealing things from that novel. And I keep telling myself not to do that because, you know, I have this fantasy that I'm going to go back and publish it someday, but I keep stealing characters. So I don't know. Pretty soon there'll be nothing left.
You're picking it down to the bones.
Yeah, right.
Well, there's no reason you couldn't go ahead and publish that. You know, I mean, you might change some character names or something, but I mean, there's no reason you couldn't go back.
Yeah, you know, mix things around. I'm sure it will need like a huge rewrite anyway. So
yeah, probably. First books. They always
right.
My first book has not seen the light of day, so.
Oh, well, there you go. I don't feel alone.
There you go, yeah. And I think I've picked over a few things from it, but for the most part, I've just sort of left it in its drawer where it will remain.
It comfortably sleeps, yeah.
Right. So you, okay, and you mentioned this briefly, but the blog that you've got a couple of blogs, and we're going to talk about both of them, but the one you were just referring to it's Novel Notes of Local Lore. That's the name of it, right?
Correct. Yeah.
And that's the one where you, and I love the description, dedicated to Chicago's forgotten residents, because that came from your experience with these elderly people, correct?
Or, yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm sure everybody has had this experience of walking into a nursing home, and it's just so, seems so depressing, you know, you just have these old crumblies, you know, sitting there drooling or whatever, and, you know, you can't think of a more depressing place to work, but actually it's not. I mean, in some ways it is, but if you just spend any amount of time sitting down next to one of these people, the stories they have to tell are just amazing. I mean, stranger than fiction.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting to me, you're not the first person I've talked to who drew inspiration from a nursing home. A good friend of mine, actually, he was won several awards for stories that just came out of his experiences there. It's like a hotbed of creative, you know, resources. So maybe that will encourage. Maybe this episode will encourage people to start going and volunteering at these nursing homes more, because they need it. I know they need that. So
I hope so. Yeah, and really, I mean, I know nursing homes, you know, obviously having worked there, they really try their best to, you know, have activities and all this kind of stuff. But really, all they really want to do is just have someone listen to them.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
And tell their story. And you're just so enriched by the experience. It's like, wow, you know, who knew that you had lived through all of this stuff, especially the people that, the population that I was working with, they were mostly Eastern European immigrants, and most of them had lived through the war. A lot of them were in Europe during the war, and just their stories of, you know, escaping the Nazis, or, you know, being in camps or whatever. You just, you know, it's shocking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now I'm kind of envisioning. So I'm a character writer, so I would go and just, you know, I'll go steal everyone's life for a while.
I know. So I do feel really guilty about it. Like, oh, should I be doing this?
Give them a few. No, you know what? I don't see it that way, though. I mean, we collect stories. That's the way our lives work, you know? I mean, not just authors. Everyone does. And so, you know, you're just going in and you're honoring them by giving them new life in a new form. So there you go. There's your justification.
Thank you. Thank you for that. That's nice.
If anybody can justify anything he does, it's me. So,
I'll call you up.
So you have another blog, which is, I think, is a quirky, funny name, but it's How to Get Your Book Published in 7,000 Easy Steps. A practical guide. So
yes, exactly.
tell me a little about this practical guide of yours.
Let's see. Well, I decided, you know, it's funny because the novel Notes of Local Lore sort of attracts a certain audience, and I actually now kind of have a little following who look forward to those.
Yeah.
But I realized that I needed to kind of branch out into a different audience.
Yeah.
And everybody's always encouraging writers to write about the craft of writing and publishing and all of this, and I just find that really boring. There's so much of that out there already. Who cares?
Right.
So I decided to write kind of a spoof on that and a sarcastic look at what it takes, not necessarily to get your book published, so actually the title's a bit misleading. It's more what happens after and all of the things that you have to go through. You think that when you land the book deal that that's it, you've hit the pinnacle, but it really, you're just at the base of the mountain.
Right.
And that's really what the blog is about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting once you actually reach that level where you've published, how your perspective has to shift. Like, there's no choice. Like, suddenly now you're no longer an author. Now you're a publisher, right?
And
you have to start thinking in terms of, you know, promotion and marketing and all the ins and outs of the business side of it, the icky parts that no one really wants to think about.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that there are some writers who are very lucky and gifted in that they have those, that sort of dual brain.
Right.
But I think most writers really just want to write. They don't really want to, you know, put themselves out and promote and beg and everything else that it takes.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of funny because I'm a little lazy about the marketing of my work. I'll be completely honest with everyone. And it is frustrating because, you know, if you don't do the marketing, then you don't actually see sales. And it is unreal to me when I encounter authors who don't do any of that and just sort of, you know, show up. I mean, you know, as much as I love these folks, I mean, they're amazing authors. They deserve everything they're getting. But it is frustrating when you just spent, you know, several hours writing blog posts and, you know, creating ads on Facebook and that sort of thing. And these guys are like, you know, yeah, I went to the museum today. I had a frozen ice beverage. Yeah.
So. I know. Don't you always wonder, is it real or is this, you know, something you made up?
I think it's real. I've talked to enough authors at this point from all across the spectrum that I can tell when they're sort of putting on airs about their, okay, you know, like leisurely writer life. Like, oh, yes, I went to a cafe today. I spent all day there, you know. What they're not telling you is that, you know, half that day was spent, you know, toiling over a blog post instead of writing their novel. But then you encounter the folks who are, you know. Yeah, I was, I interviewed Jonathan Mayberry, who was literally sitting out watching whales migrate past his chateau, you know.
Oh, so my God. Forget it.
That's the life I want. So, okay. So you're out there. So what, just speaking of the marketing and promotion, like how do you actually promote your work?
Well, I do have a publicist, BookSparks.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of the stuff that, you know, I can't do. So, you know, the reviews, speaking engagements, that kind of stuff.
Right.
But otherwise, I'm starting from, when I first started this, it's embarrassing, but I didn't even have a smartphone.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a flip phone, I had nothing, I had no platform, zero. So it's taken, you know, the past year and a half to build all of that up. And, you know, I tried to do the blogs, the newsletter, I have a website, of course, you know, all the standards. I've been trying lately to be invited to speak at different book clubs. I went on to meetup.com and, you know, solicited all these book clubs in the area, and I wasn't getting any response, so I thought that was weird. So I checked into it, and I realized I'd been blocked for spamming.
Oh.
Come on.
Oh,
this is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's tough. Like, because I get that why there are rules about that sort of thing, but it's frustrating because, you know, that's why you're there.
Yeah, and they were really genuine, like, letters, like, hi, I'm blah, 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 whatever, but whatever. I guess
somebody marked it, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So so you have BookSparks, you said. You're using them.
Yes, I'm using them. They're great. They have been really, really helpful in kind of getting me to places I couldn't get on my own. And also, really, I think they were very helpful in sort of teaching me the ropes.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was great. And seeing the world more from a wide-angle lens.
Yeah.
Than
yeah.
I was before. Like,
it is,
you know,
good.
You have to think. Yeah, yeah, you have to think on a different scale.
Right. Yeah. And having someone who can kind of guide you through that. Like, there are things that we don't think about as authors that are, I don't know, maybe they're essential, maybe they're not, but they're certainly helpful most of the time. And we don't often think of that. So it is good to have someone looking out for your interests.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they have had a lot of great ideas. Obviously, they're, you know, have a lot of experience and very professional. So
yeah,
it's been great, a great relationship.
Yeah. So, as far as, are they helping you with things like the website and that sort of thing, or is that something totally separate?
They helped me to create it.
Yeah.
And then they also, you know, every single thing that they would put in front of me, they would say, well, how about a newsletter? And I'm like, no way, I'm never doing that. And then I would come back a week later or a month later and say, okay. And then the same with the blogs. I said, there's no way I'm ever doing a blog. And they said, well, okay, but how are you going to reach people?
Yeah.
So then I'm like, I don't even know what a blog is. I mean, really, when I went into this, I was really naive. So I would send them all this stuff, like all these essays. So they're like, wow, this is a great essay, but not a blog.
Right.
So they finally helped me craft some ideas and really taught me a lot.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. I mean, and that's actually, I kind of envy that. You know, because I've had to invent this stuff as I went and never thought about going out and finding somebody who could teach me how to do all of it. So,
a lot of hand holding.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool, though. So, okay, you've got Book Sparks. They're helping you with speaking engagements and that sort of thing. Do you do a lot of speaking? Are you being invited now to a lot of places?
Yeah, I think I've had a pretty active year so far. I've gotten a few on my own, but I also went on the She Writes Press.
Yeah.
Book tour, and that was great because that got me into, you know, like Book Soup in Hollywood and Third Place Books in Seattle. So a lot of bigger places that I wouldn't have been able to get on my own. So that was great.
Yeah. Those are useful organizations to be in contact with too, because they'll also come back to you later and, you know, offer you something else.
Yeah, exactly. I've had several already who have said, you know, when the next book comes out, we'd love to have you.
Yeah, So how do you, you've got one book out and you've got a new one coming out. How are you gearing up for the second launch? How are you getting that promoted, I guess?
Well, I'm going to be working with BookSparks again.
Okay.
They are putting together their strategy for this one. So actually we're scheduled to have a meeting soon. I'm hoping that I can sort of ride the wave on this first book. I was fortunate enough to be able to put one out, you know, the next year. So it's kind of like, you know, after 6 months, usually your book is backlisted or dead or whatever.
Right.
But I'm hoping that I can keep it afloat long enough to, you know, right around the holidays, start the push for the second one.
Right. Yeah. So do you see the most sales around the holidays? Is that kind of your big season?
Well, I missed the holidays.
Okay.
With book one, because it didn't come out until April.
Yeah.
So, and I'm hoping, that will be the case. But I'm not sure. We'll see.
Well, we'll see. I think it's kind of interesting. We still tend to think in terms of the sort of seasonal rush on this stuff, but I just don't know how many people are actually going out and saying, you know, I want to buy a new book for Christmas, you know? I don't know. I haven't seen that yet.
Well, you know, it's funny because I did have this conversation with BookSparks about, there's sort of this pro and con about whether you want your book to come out in spring or fall.
Right.
You know, fall you get the whole back to school and the holidays, and then the spring release is all about, you know, the beach read. It's kind of a toss-up, and I agree with what you're saying. I'm not really sure that it really has an influence on, you know, normal readers, or if it's just something that the industry talks about.
Maybe. You know, and I do understand the idea of segmenting for beach reads and that sort of thing, because they do promotions around that. But I don't see that there's an advantage, you know, for me. We'll just say for me. I don't see there's an advantage for me to release in spring versus fall versus any other time, because if the book's there, I can always do a promotion aimed at summer reading or something, you know? So
I agree.
We'll say that it's probably effective, and I just don't know enough. We'll just go with that.
Sounds good.
So you're do you do anything connected to the book? I mean, you've got the blog. Is that, do you kind of relate that back to the work at all? I mean, that's where you got your source material mostly.
Well, that's what I'm hoping, that people will connect the dots. They'll, you know, either like the book and then go to the website and, you know, discover the blog, or vice versa. That was kind of one of the things that I wanted to do, is I just didn't want this esoteric blog about, you know, the writing life or whatever. I thought it would be good to have something that sort of connects the two, and that they exist in that same place in history. So
yeah, so see,
I think that's advantageous.
I think that is advantageous. I think you're probably getting, if you're not already, you're going to get some traction out of that, because one of the things I discovered, and I've fallen off from doing this, unfortunately, because I got busy. But interviewing, you know, yeah, among other things. But I started writing short stories on my blog after I had this realization that no one who was signing up on my mailing list cared about publishing or any of the things I was writing about, because they were there coming off of my fiction. So I started writing fiction, and suddenly I got a lot of blog engagement, which in turn fed book sales. So I think what you've got that's interesting is this built-in, you know, because it's historic fiction, then all this historic stuff that you uncover and write about on the blog, I think that's just going to be very attractive to readers. So I think you've got a nice little tool growing there.
Thanks. I think so, too.
Yeah.
I thought it would be kind of neat. Yeah, I will. I thought it would be kind of neat someday to maybe put those into a little collection.
Yeah, why not?
Actually, lots of readers have written to me. I have no idea if they've read the book, but they say, oh, do you have any plans to put all these stories in the book into a book? I'd be the first to buy it.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, really?
There you go. That's let me tell you something. Marketing 101. If you see a demand that you can fill, fill it.
Okay. I will.
Go lay this out and make it available and collect the money. That's, that's the best marketing advice I can ever give you. Yeah, I know. Yeah. So, and how are things going? I don't want, you know, specific numbers or anything, but I mean, how are you doing, you know, success-wise? Are you kind of hitting where you feel like you've got traction, or?
Well, it's funny because the night before my pub date, I got this frantic email from the publisher saying, we need to talk right now. We have a problem. Like, oh, no. Not what you want to hear the night before your pub date. So
right.
We got on the phone, and she said, okay, it's a good and bad problem. She said, we just found out from the warehouse that there are no books left.
Okay.
From your print run, and now that you're pubbing tomorrow, and we cannot fill all of the orders. So we need to do some kind of emergency printing, because they didn't want to let the orders sit there because they were afraid that they would get canceled. So what happened, I think, is that because I got the 2-starred reviews from Library Journal and Booklist,
right?
Baker & Taylor, who is the supplier for all the libraries, pretty much bought up my whole entire first print run.
Excellent. All right.
For the library systems. So, yeah, I feel like I'm doing really well, because now I'm in the second printing, and, you know, sales are still going strong, so it's great.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, that's a good problem to have.
Yeah, exactly. You know, your dream to get into the library system. So
right.
Great.
So, speaking of the printing, so how are you? I always hesitate to ask this question because I don't want to. I don't know. I don't want to set anything off. But you're self publishing, right? Or no? Did you have a small press? Or okay? How are
it's
you?
It's a small hybrid.
Oh, small hybrid. Okay. Do you mind, you know, shouting them out, or do you want to keep that?
No,
secret?
Great. No, I'm publishing with She Writes.
Oh, that's right. You did say that. I'm sorry.
That's okay. They're a small hybrid press based in Berkeley.
Yeah.
And they are really kind of finding their own space. You know, they live somewhere between traditional and self-pubbing, and I think it's a model that is really going to take off in the next couple of years, because publishing is, you know, so out of whack right now.
Yeah. So how did you end up connecting with them?
Well, I had that first novel, and I couldn't find an agent. I couldn't, you know, get anyone to read it. And I thought, you know, I'm obviously doing something wrong. So I decided to go to the Writer's Digest conference in New York. And, yeah, it was great. I mean, talk about, you know, the starry-eyed girl going into this. My hopes were quickly dashed. There was a lot of negativity there about
really?
The Big Five. And
yeah.
The first workshop that I went into was given by an agent, April Eberhardt, who you know, she's obviously not my agent, but we have developed a closer relationship. And she was talking about this new concept in publishing called hybrid press. And I was just, I thought it sounded fantastic. They were really laying it out. So, and then I went to another workshop, and they were, it was Kristen Harnish, the author of The Vintner's Daughter, had gotten picked up by HarperCollins Canada, but she could not find a U.S. publisher. So HarperCollins Canada was rushing the deal. They wanted to put the book out right away, and she really wanted a U.S. release at the same time. So her agent was April, and they started scrambling and for a hybrid press as an alternative, and they found She Writes, and then they became, they did a deal with She Writes, and the book came out through them in the U.S., and was very successful, and so now April is really promoting She Writes to every conference she goes to, and yeah, it's a great model, it really is.
I'm going to check them out and learn a little more, because I've heard of them, but I hadn't really dug in and investigated like what they're all about, what their, you know, what their requirements are and that sort of thing. Being called She Writes, I'm guessing I wouldn't stand a chance of being published in.
Probably not.
That's okay. That's okay. I got my own thing. All right. So we're coming up on time, and I have really enjoyed this conversation. Historic fiction, by the way, is something I'm interested in, but my wife is much more interested in. And I've been trying to encourage her to start writing. We actually plotted out a book together. Well, plotted it out. We came up with an idea that she's really excited about. And clearly, we would write two very different books. So I'm trying to encourage her to actually pick up and write this thing. So I'm going to let her listen to your interview, because I think she'd be inspired. And she's definitely going to like your blog. I can tell you that right now. So you may have an upcoming fan. So
yay, thank you.
You got it.
That's fabulous.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Everybody listening to the sound of my voice, stay right where you are. You can, you're going to get a little wrap-up after this interview. And you'll, of course, find everything we've talked about in the show notes for this episode, where you can find a link to Michelle's website, which is michellecoxwrites.com. Among other things, you'll find her Facebook page, author page on Amazon, that sort of thing. So, Michelle, thanks so much for being on the show. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
You're welcome, Kevin. Thanks for having me, and it was fun. I enjoyed it very much.
All right, we'll have to do it again sometime. So, everybody else, stick around. Well, that was kind of an abrupt ending, but it'll work. Stick around, everyone. And thank you for sticking around, by the way. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Michelle Cox. You know, there's something about this idea that just, I don't know, resonates with me. Going out, and I said this in the interview about, you know, how we all collect stories, which is exactly what humans do. I mean, that's what we are. We're story collecting machines, and we're storytelling machines, and that's how we organize our lives. It's how we you know, create the, I was going to say justifications, but, you know, not everything is a justification. Sometimes it's just an explanation to yourself about who you are and why you do the things you do. Stories are very important, which is why this podcast is the story podcast. It's all about getting to that kernel at the center of every human, that little nugget inside of every human that is the storyteller and the story receiver. So I like this idea of going out and finding basically stories that would be lost to history and time, and taking them in, not necessarily taking them and telling them word for word, although you could do that, but take what you learn from the story, what you feel when you hear the story. The emotion behind the story is as powerful as anything else. So if you can convey that to your readers or to your listeners, if you are an entrepreneur and you're not a writer, you probably have to speak to someone at some point. You probably have to, you know, present in some way. And if you can create a story, craft a story that resonates with your audience, you're going to see a lot more success. And that is, you know, of course, incredibly true for authors. If you're crafting a story for your audience, your readers. You know, you want to find the emotional strings that you can pluck. You want to find, even if you're writing nonfiction, by the way, you want to be able to resonate with your reader on an emotional level, because that's how we interact with story. And I feel very strongly about this, by the way, because I'm an advocate of storytelling in general, but you know, as an author and as a marketer and you know, all the things that are a part of my life, I feel that, you know, there are all these fantastic stories all around us, and we should allow those into ourselves and consider them and let them shape how we think so that we can express ourselves in new and profound ways to our audience. That's my take. So I'm not going to keep us for too long. This is a really quick podcast this time around, but I've got things to get to and some more unpacking and organizing to do. And I've got a call coming up soon, you know, the usual stuff. Plus, you know, the day job stuff. Now that I'm director of marketing for Draft Digital, I've got some duties to follow through on. And I got a little dog to walk. So it's a very chaotic and busy time in the Wordslinger's life, I'm going to be honest with you, but I'm kind of enjoying it. I would love to hear from you. If you would do me a favor, I would absolutely adore you if you would go on to, anywhere you listen to this podcast, but in particular on iTunes. Give the show, 4 or 5 stars if you're feeling generous, and write a review. And these reviews make a huge difference. They help people discover the show. They do, by the way, encourage me, which gives me the energy to kind of keep going and keep doing things and keep trying new things. I do want to kind of expand the sort of the mission and purpose of this show over time. You know, I think that can be done. So your help is appreciated, and you can help me by going and leaving a review. And if you want to contribute even further, you can call me and leave me a question, or you can leave me a voicemail on my website, or email me. But let's start with the phone number. You can call me at 281-809-WORD. That's 281-809-9673. Leave me a voicemail from your mobile telephone or landline telephone device. Do people still have landlines? I don't even know anymore. I'm sure people do. I'll get 100 emails saying I have one. But you can also leave me a voicemail on my website at wordslingerpodcast.com. There is a button that floats along the right-hand side of the screen, a speak pipe button. You can do that from any device, from your computer, from your mobile phone, your iPad, whatever. You leave me a voicemail. It sends me that. And it sends me a quirky little transcript. Sometimes they're accurate, but most of the time they're kind of all over the place. I should start sharing some of those sometime. You can also email me from wordslingerpodcast.com. Just go click on the contact button. You can type up an email and send it along the old-fashioned way. We'll call that the old-fashioned way. the living in the future old-fashioned way. You can also help the show if you're willing. Now, I keep talking about this, and I keep saying I'm going to work on the tiers and everything. I just got to find the time. But I do have a Patreon campaign, which you can find on the website at wordslingerpodcast.com and on any of the show notes for any of these episodes. That's optional. But it does help. A little bit of cash here and there is kind of cool. I don't have a ton of contributors on that, but the people who do, I greatly appreciate. And I'm very grateful for what you're giving, because it shows that you care about the content of this show. I mean, that's very helpful to me. I don't try to push it anymore. I was trying to do a whole big giant goal and everything. But I think, I don't want the show to turn into a money grab. I just want to build it into something that's beneficial and inspiring and something that delights the listener. That's what I'm trying to build. So hope I'm doing that. And if you feel like helping, I really do appreciate it. Otherwise, just keep listening. That's good enough for me. So thanks so much for tuning in for another week of Wordslinger Mayhem, shenanigans, chaos, whatever. Minnie says hello, by the way. I don't know if she's kind of burrowed into a blanket to my right now. she's, you know, she's adjusting. her routines have been disrupted too. So thanks so much though for being a part of all this. And I will see you next week with another fantastic interview from another amazing story. Another amazing guest, we'll say. I was going to try to make a whole story, you know, circle us back around, but I haven't had enough coffee. So take care of yourselves out there, and I will see you next time.
Wordslinger.